painting the last of his comrades. Still, the mutants came on. Lydran felt the psychocircuitry of his hood begin to heat as he strained his powers to throw up a force field that stopped a swinging saw. The weapon came around again, even as another cultist lunged at him with some sort of short-range las cutter. Lydran realized an instant too late that he could not halt both attacks. And then Sergeant Lasordis' power fist was there, slamming headlong into the bladesaw and causing it to shred apart in a hail of razor-sharp shrapnel. Its wielder was hurled back by the resultant explosion, while Lydran parried the lascutter with the end of his stave and then shot the mutant carrying it through his face. He spared Lasordis a sidelong glance as the last handful of mutants turned tail and fled for the shadows.
"My thanks, Veteran Sergeant," he said. "Your armour would not have sufficed," replied the Terminator, his expression and body language rendered unreadable within the massive bulk of his war gear. Lydran shook his head and looked behind him. Two of Squad Furion were down, Lordus kneeling next to one with his reductor deployed. Yet, in return, the cultists had been driven back, the surprise of their attack counting for little against the stubborn indomitability of the Imperial fists. Even as he watched, Lydran saw several of the foe swing themselves wildly off the platform's edge, relying on their harnesses to catch them and help them swarm away to safety. That he would not allow. Wincing slightly at the pain in his knee, Lydran opened his force's reserve vox channel.
"Sergeant Ordus! Sergeant Thane! We are pushing into the structure. Enemy resistance is broken. Expect runners, numbers unknown."
"Understood, brother librarian," came Reaver Sergeant Ordus's reply. "None shall escape our blades."
"Nor ours," added Reaver Sergeant Thade.
As though to emphasize their words, Lydran heard the vox-amplified screams and thunderous report of heavy bolt pistols as the two squads of vanguard troopers went to work. One was concealed above the infested floors, one below. None would escape the vengeance of the Imperial fists.
"What of those traversing the exterior of the tower?"
asked Sergeant Lasordis, as he prepared to stomp into the darkness of the enemy stronghold and sweep for survivors.
"They will not get far," said Lydran,
and opened a vox channel to his force's gunship. Magus Jai sat cross-legged in the middle of a circle of flickering candles. They'd been laid out to follow the jagged curves of the worm-form glyph that took up much of the floor of her meditation chamber, and they lit the brushed metal walls with dancing tableau of light and shadow. More glyphs seemed to distort and dance upon the walls, interspersing the jagged writings that Jai had scribed when the hand of Father was upon her mind. Firelight sparked like stars amidst the gemstones and gewgaws that her fellow rebels had offered her, and had piled in shrine-like offering heaps in the alcoves of the chamber. A superstition had arisen, ever since the attack upon the astropathic sanctum a year before, that if one offered a token to the Magus, her blessings would shield the giver from harm. If Jai possessed any such power, she didn't know about it. But she hadn't seen fit to discourage a practice that seemed harmless while offering her people hope. Besides, some small part of her admired the way that the riches of the earth made her chambers look more sacred, more mystical, more in keeping with her role in Father's favour. None of this concerned Jai now, however. Her eyes were closed upon the outer world. She turned her gaze instead to the void within, to the inky and somehow viscous blackness that flowed through her mind and allowed her to employ Father's gifts in the Star Children's service. It was not a pleasant experience, communing in this way. She preferred to externalize her powers, to inflict them upon her enemies or use them to steady her allies' nerves, as she had done 100 times and more since this war began. Jai was no stranger to peril, not anymore. Yet still it unsettled her to slip into the cold and clinging blackness of the power that lurked within her own mind. It felt as though ice-cold oil coated her skin, as though a shadowy substance roiled within her skull and threatened to drown her in its depths.
Focus, Jai told herself. Do father's bidding as only you can.
Slowly, the darkness all around her shimmered and swirled as she focused her powers and reached with them, out into the aching spaces beyond. Shadow flowed about her, and for an instant she heard a tumultuous whispering fill the blackness, pressing in upon her from all sides and filling her with animal terror. Phoenicia Jai ignored the sensation, as she had done many times before, and forced her consciousness on, through the void, to issue the summons.
I must speak with him. It must be now.
Jai felt resistance at first, a reluctance and a hint of something else. Irritation, she thought, perhaps arrogance. Who was she to give orders to him?
Now!
She urged again, making no effort to conceal her anger or contempt. The inky shadows around her stirred again. A current of void cold whirled around her, so frigid that it burned her skin with its passing, before coiling into a faintly glowing shape, somewhere between a humanoid figure and a writhing worm form.
It is dangerous for me to speak now.
The thought hit her like a jab in the ribs. Back in reality, she felt herself bare her teeth and furrow her brow in anger.
I am father's voice. I am his magus. You address me with respect.
She added a vicious twist to the words, enough to send tendrils of viscid gloom needling into the writhing figure and cause it to stiffen in pain.
Magus, how may I serve, father?
Came the pained response, and though she sensed the simmering anger behind the words, Jai was satisfied that they had been spoken with proper reverence.
Father wishes to know how you mean to work his will against these invaders from beyond the stars, she said with her mind. You used the Star Children's warning well, and their leader has fallen, to the great joy of the cult. Yet the fists of the great oppressor close about our cells one after another, in Hive Spire, and our efforts to fight back come to naught.
Their numbers are few, he replied, though it may cost us 10,000 brothers and sisters to do it, we can wear them down.
No, the ascension must progress.
She shot back, angry at the callous disregard for their comrades' lives that she heard in his voice.
This cannot become a war of attrition. The gods draw nigh, and we must prepare the way for their coming.
They have angered Gaia's rulers with their arrival, came his reply after a lengthy pause. There is discord amongst the oppressors, where there is only unity amongst our ranks. The newcomers are not beloved of the people, but rather they herd them aside like cattle and spread fear and resentment with their every deed. If we cannot fight them directly, then we must bleed them slowly, attack them with cunning and mislead them at every turn. And all the while, we show the oppressed the true nature of their so-called saviors.
Yes, they will flock to us when they see what their corpse god offers in his supposed mercy, she thought spoke,
the last word causing ripples of disgust and bitterness to quiver through the darkness.
Do what you can to turn the oppressors against one another from within, brother. Primus Lure and I will work father's will, as you have suggested, from without. Between us, we will break them. Stars' blessings upon you.
She ended the communion without waiting for a response and opened her eyes. She gasped in a shuddering breath and felt goosebumps rise across her skin as the sensation of cold, oily immersion clung to her for a few heartbeats more. Slowly, breathing deeply, Magus Jai rose and rearranged her robes before taking up her stave of office and smiling a small, vicious smile.
"We will break them," she breathed to herself. "And then, ascension."
Chapter 6 Chapter Champion Elridge Hastor paced across the square like a predator stalking prey. He held Lamentation easily in one hand, the Artificer Blade's ornate grip as familiar to him as the feel of his own limbs. His helm's superior autosensors swept his surrounds, flicking through visual and spiritual spectra as they sought enemy targets. His cloak billowed behind him in the blood-warm winds that flowed down from exchange events above the square. His footfalls rang against the metal ground and echoed from the shop fronts that clustered on all sides. 5 yellow-armoured assault marines followed in Hastor's wake. They carried chainswords, bolt pistols, and, in the case of Sergeant Thren, a thrumming plasma pistol. In the many-levelled urban tangle of the upper commercias, they went without jump packs. Opportunities for rocket-propelled leaps were few, but tight spaces were many, especially where their enemies liked to hide. Sudden thunder filled the air as a maglev train whipped overhead, running upon a raised track. It and the scattering of wide-eyed faces that stared through the windows on teetering upper stories were the only evidence of civilians that Hastor could see.
"I expected greater civilian presence," said Sergeant Thren. "Did the RBTs place this sector under curfew?"
"No, I forbade them," replied Hastor, his deep voice distant as his mind worked swiftly.
"And yet, somehow word flows ahead of our coming," glowered Thren. "And yet," echoed Hastor.
The sergeant's frustration mirrored his own. The hive had a billion voices, it seemed. Wherever the Imperial fists went, those voices heralded their coming in surreptitious whispers. Butted up against the square's edge, the warehouse complex waited for them. The building was blocky and belligerent, looming over the adjoining businesses as though shouldering them aside. Arc Lumen lit its towering flanks, which rose above the smaller dwellings around it, through the hanging nests of cables and pipes and vents, through the faintly lambent smog of pollutants that passed for cloud cover until it mattered with this level's roof, several hundred feet up. The cog and pit crest of Greater Clan Van Sappen was picked out by artfully arrayed sprays of light upon the building's side.
"No light in any of the windows," noted Sergeant Thren. "Sanctified door seals are in place. Seems altogether quiescent."
The intelligence they had received from the Adeptus Arbites was that since Clan Van Sappen's virtual stranding beyond the Mistraka disaster zone, all but a handful of their assets within Angelica's hive had been temporarily shut down. This much made sense, thought Hastor. Why waste energy and resources maintaining installations that were currently no use to their masters? What made less sense were the telltale vibrations that spying servo skulls had detected within the supposedly empty structure. Interrogation of the macro-cogitators that regulated utility flow through this level of the commercias further revealed a continual and ongoing power drain somewhere inside the warehouse. It all pointed to the presence of the cult of the writhing worm. Hastor halted before the granite steps that led up to the structure's cherub-graven front doors. Wordlessly, he gestured first to his left, then to his right, towards the cramped alleyways that ran down the building's flanks.
"Understood, Brother Champion," said Sergeant Thren, then paused. "I do not doubt that we are equal to this task, brother, but..."
Hastor turned a look upon the sergeant and waited.
"The enemy are elusive, Brother Champion. We are but 6. We cannot block every rat hole and crawlway exiting this structure.
Should we not have the support of the arbitrators or the Gyrish Airborne to cordon off this sector?
The sergeant's question was not unfair, Hastor thought, and it goaded his anger back near the surface. When the intelligence had reached them of this latest potential insurgent nest, he had voxed an immediate demand to Lydran for an assault force and Gyrish support platoons. He had not believed it when he was told no, and had requested clarification in case there had been some error in comprehension at the librarian's end. Again, and more forcefully, his request had been denied. Hastor was still simmering from the censure implied in that second curt response. A sector of Hive Spire had been compromised 3 hours earlier, as previously undetected insurgent cells had mobilized in a coordinated ambush on a Gyrish arms convoy. Several assaults had been postponed, battle brothers redeployed to ensure the sanctity of the Conclave Chambers and Governor's Palace, and to drive back and eliminate the cultists. All other available assets were engaged in sweep and secure operations through 18 sectors of level Primus and Orbitus. First Arbitrator Verrill had once again asserted that her precinct fortresses were stretched to breaking point, maintaining law and order throughout the Hive while also managing what she described as the fallout from the Imperial Fist's Purge and Secure campaign. In short, and yet again, operations were not slated to begin in the Commercias at this time. Hastor shook his head, a short, sharp gesture tight with frustration. 19 days the Imperial Fists had been on Gaia, and they had so far laid claim to little more than the tips of one damned Hive city. His chapter had concluded entire planetary campaigns in shorter spans of time. They had besieged and broken open fortresses in a matter of hours. But here they were, advancing at a crawl. Caution and temerity, their watchwords. It was shameful. If Hastor had been in charge, he would have had the Governor and her preening conclave dragged away in chains by now. How dare they continue their ludicrous politicking in the face of direct commands from the Adeptus Astartes? He would have left the Gyrish to look to their own protection, gathered all the strike forces' might, and struck decisively to end this fiasco. Yet, where would that strike have landed? He asked himself. The enemy writhed away like smoke at every turn, and without a secure fortification to work from and sufficient intelligence to pinpoint the foe's command structure and eliminate it, how were the Imperial Fists to aim their strength decisively? Stubbornness and pride bade him cast the thoughts aside. He would have formulated a more aggressive, decisive stratagem that brought the foe to honest battle, he was sure. But it didn't matter what Elrich Hastor would or would not have done, for he was not in command. Astor Lydran was. A newcomer. A psyker.
Brother Champion?
Hastor stirred himself from his thoughts with a surge of self-chastisement. He lingered on the enemy's threshold in doubt, when he should forge ahead. That was what this was all about, after all.
It's only us, Sergeant. We do not have to purge every hostile from this structure. It is important only that we strike hard and break their strength. We will drive them from their strong point, put fear into them of our righteous retribution, and then move on to the next and the next until what remains of our enemy strength flees before us to the very lowest levels of this benighted Hive city. And, he admitted quietly to himself, by doing this, I may light a fire under Brother Librarian Lydran, or else prove that his position of command is undeserved.
It was not that Hastor resented Lydran for his origins or his unnatural powers. At least so he told himself. Primarch knew most of the Imperial Fists had been quick enough to accept their reinforcements from the Ultima Founding, or even to seek the crossing of the Rubicon Primaris themselves, despite the risks. From what he understood, Lydran was of Terran stock, albeit via several millennia in stasis upon Mars. As for witches, they were a necessary evil and a potent asset. Hastor was not so stiff-necked as to deny this. It was simply that there was a correct manner for Imperial Fists to conduct themselves in battle, and to Hastor's mind, neither Astor Lydran nor his commands to date conform to it.
As you say, Brother Champion, said Sergeant Thren.
To the man's credit, if he felt any doubts about their mission, he kept them to himself. Thren spoke quickly over his squad vox channel, and he and one of his battle brothers peeled off to the left while the other three assault marines jogged away to the right. Hastel watched them go, then turned back to the ornate doors ahead of him. Another maglev train swept overhead, its thunder rising to a cacophony before receding again into the distant sprawl of the hive. The enemy had already had ample time to see him coming by now. But then Hastor was not hiding. If the heretics had fled, he would simply hunt them to their next bolt hole. If they waited in ambush, he would endure the worst they could hurl at him before crushing them like the insects they were. In either case, his enemy's bastion would fall, a victory in Hastor's eyes. The fifth company champion took three quick strides to the top of the steps and swung Lamentation in a double-handed strike. The energized blade clove a diagonal cut through the doors, and, glowing molten at their edges, great chunks of ornate metal fell back into the building with a clang. Hastor ducked through the gap, the bisected face of a carved cherub staring one-eyed at him from the ground. He found himself in a high-ceilinged atrium, whose marble statues were draped in dust-cloth shrouds. The frescoed floor had been defaced with a huge worm form, spray-painted over the representation of the emperor enthroned. The only light was the which spilled in through the sundered doors at his back. It threw his shadow out long and stretched, until it touched the dusty reception adept's desk on the far side of the room. Hastor swept his auto-senses right and left. Contacts, movement, and body heat were highlighted in his field of vision by runic designators. Further in, barely in range of his helm's limited internal ore specs, Hastor detected a substantial power signature.
"Breach! Contacts ahead! Advancing!" he voxed.
"Squad Thren, moving to support," replied the sergeant. "No contact. Pushing up."
Hastor strode across the atrium, and had almost reached the next doorway when he detected a flurry of movement from above. It came from a balustraded walkway, 100 feet up and to the right. He saw a shadowy figure, the lenses of glare goggles catching the faint light. The muzzle of an autogun lit with sudden fire. Chattering echoes rolled through the atrium as bullets raked Hastor's armor. He led them, making no attempt to evade the attack. Then, in one smooth motion, he levelled his bolt pistol and put a round through his assailant's face. One shell, one gory detonation. The ragged remains of the cultist's body crumpled. As though that first death was their signal, more heretics came at him. Double doors banged open beyond the desk, beneath a bronze plaque that read, "Clericum." Figures spilled through it, guns raised and spitting fire. At the same time, another two contacts registered, these above and to his left. More bullets swarmed towards him. Hastor dove to his right, landing in a roll and coming back up in a fighting crouch. Gunfire blitzed the frescoed floor where he stood. As he came to his feet, the champion's pistol spoke again. A cultist with a ridged forehead and mauve skin jerked as a bolt shell punched into her torso, then detonated in a shower of blood. A second heretic was erased above the collarbone as a shell exploded in his skull. A third lost a leg and crashed to the floor, screaming, her gun spilling from her hands to skitter to a stop at Hastor's feet. The champion trod on the weapon, slow and deliberate, and crushed it beneath his boot. His autosenses chimed a warning, and Hastor spun, swinging his sword in an arc that brought the flat of the blade into contact with the cracked grenade spinning down towards him. With a deft twitch of his thumb, Hastor killed Lamentation's disruption field for a split second, allowing him to strike the explosive without triggering it prematurely. It whipped back along its own trajectory and detonated with an implosive bang against the underside of the left-hand walkway. Masonry and rebar tore and fell. Two howling cultists fell with it. Their bodies broke upon impact with the hard stone floor.
and Hastur paid them no further mind.
"Oppressor! Monster! Father, take you all!"
The scream of hatred came from a tall man in an armoured utility suit who charged Hastur with a mining pick. The cultist's eyes were wide with fury. They lashed tainted yellow in the light from the broken doorway.
"There is only one monster here, deviant!"
Hastur responded, easily parrying the man's wild swings with his blade.
"Get him clear!"
shouted the man, sounding desperate.
"Get Father clear! Oh, hold!"
Hastur disarmed his enemy with a flick of Lamentation's tip, then swept the weapon around and lopped off the cultist's head. His twin hearts beat faster.
Father, was the Xenocult's deity here? In this warehouse?
The man had certainly sounded desperate enough, but would they really be so brazen as to house their false prophet or idol or whatever father was in a structure under the very noses of their enemies?
If they were certain of victory before our arrival, he thought, who could know the minds of heretics? Who would wish to?
He set off at once, striding deeper into the structure, Auspex alive for signs of the foe. He saw movement ahead, swift and frantic, several hundred feet further into the structure and making for the thrumming power signature near the warehouse's heart. Hastur quickened his pace.
"Sergeant, be advised, enemy has made vocal reference to father being in situ," he voxed.
"Understood, brother champion. Here, it seems unlikely, does it not?"
Hastur shouldered open a heavy wood-panelled door. A cultist came at him, and he ran the man through before kicking him off his blade.
"Few guards, poor security, uncomfortable proximity to Hive Spire," he said by way of agreement. "And yet our enemies do not fight a conventional war. Perhaps they move farther from one site to another and rely upon the very unsuitability of their strongholds to keep him from our notice. Or perhaps their deity is represented or embodied by more than one individual, more than one idolatrous relic." "Do we vox this in?"
asked Thren, and over the link, Hastur heard his plasma pistol howl.
"Not yet," he replied. "Not until we know what this is. Converge on the power signature. Purge all hostiles. And if they attempt to break out, contain them."
"Understood," said Thren.
Hastur strode through cloistered administration chambers, past cramped workspaces, each with its own devotional shrine to clan and emperor. Here and there, he saw more worm glyphs. Crude vat tallow candles were clustered on desks and in corners, some flickering with weak light, others dark and wisping smoke where they had been hurriedly extinguished. In the next corridor, his blade made short work of two cultists who came at him with knives and pistols. He barely registered them, instead looking beyond them to where a larger figure with three arms and a hunched spine vanished through another door. The power source burned bright beyond it.
"Brother champion, we are nearing the power source. Enemy resistance increasing," reported Thren.
"Understood. Breaching containment storage chamber," replied Hastur.
"It's here, brother sergeant. Rally on me!"
Blade and pistol ready, Hastur surged through the doorway.
Was father truly here?
If so, he would cut down whatever Xenos abomination he discovered and end this war at a blade stroke. Perhaps a captaincy would be his reward. Hastur was met by the glare of massive banks of arc lumen, arrayed all around the chamber and beaming out light until it seemed to bleach the very air. Industrial units made for deep delve mining, far more than any labour could require, but enough to draw an anomalous amount of motive force from the level's grid. He had an instant to register rows of ornate containment bays, intended for unsuitable or highly valuable goods. He saw gantries around the chamber's edge, radiating from a vast central column up and down, whose length forests of cabling and pipework ran, spliced cables flowing like serpents to feed the lumen rigs. In a split second, he took in the ragged handful of cultists kneeling in prayer around the column,
the hunchbacked mutant standing before them, like a chaplain before his oathing brothers. In that same second, Hastur saw the blasting charges, clamped around the base of the column in such profusion that it seemed as though the structure suckled a swarm of parasites. Arming runes flashed baleful red upon dozens of explosive charges. In that instant, Hastur understood. Anger, shock, and most of all shame flooded through him.
To have been so easily led by these heretics.
"Freedom for Gaia!"
shrieked the mutant in a mangled voice as it squeezed the detonators clutched in its talons.
"Thren, retreat, get—"
The rest of Hastor's words were lost in the thunderous roar of the explosion. The cultists watched from the windows of a mercantile hab tower, a quarter mile from the warehouse. The oppressors had come, as had been foretold. Disappointingly few, but that hardly mattered. From the balcony of a hab unit offered up by an indoctrinated merchant, the cultists had watched through magnoculars as the oppressors entered the Van Sappen warehouse. Minutes later, a ferocious explosion rocked the hab tower. Acolyte Josiah and his brood martyring themselves that the prophecy might be fulfilled. The cultists had known envy then, for by their selfless sacrifice, Josiah and his people ascended to join the Star Children. They would see them again, when the ascension was complete, and on that day all would know unity and bliss.
"Stars' blessings,"
they murmured, shaping the worm form with their clawed fingers. The cultists watched with avid eyes as the Van Sappen warehouse buckled from within. Fire and dust geysered from ornate windows. Glass wickered out in a glittering storm to lacerate the businesses all around. A maglev train, passing with timing so fortuitous it could only have been ordained by Father, was struck by the expanding shockwave of the blast and torn from its track. The carriages tumbled through the air, the vehicle buckling and twisting like an agonized worm to smash down amongst the structures of the commercials, amidst blossoms of flame. The cultists were silent, awed by the destruction unleashed, sobered by the sudden cascade of ruin. There were no innocents, they reminded themselves. There were only those who cowered beneath the oppressor's boot, and those with the righteousness to give all for the cause. Father would know who was who, even beyond death's veil, and he would ensure that all who deserved their eternal reward received it. Still, they watched as the warehouse crumpled, a gouged-out shell that could no longer support its own weight. Slow and painful the collapse began, but it gathered pace rapidly, until the roar of the avalanche echoed across the commercials. Like a drowning man whose last clutch for life drags others down with him, so the collapsing structure wrenched away the supports from the level above. Massive crossbeams, sparking cables, rent pipes, and thousands of tons of ferrocrete thundered down from overhead. Water and promethium mingled in cascading profusion. Ground cars and cargo haulers and Arbites armoured transports fell amongst the debris, plunging into the cavernous maw that had yawned suddenly in the commercial's level above. Sparking shopfront signs fell, great slabs of the buildings they had adorned coming with them. Buckled lumen poles toppled into the billowing smoke and rising firestorm. Broken statuary plunged down and was dashed to ruin. People. So many people. The hive quake rolled outwards, shattering windows, triggering alarm hymnals, sending ground cars skidding into one another, and hurling Gyrish citizens from their feet. For a long moment, the cultists feared that Josiah had struck too dolorous a blow, as the hab tower quivered around them, and the balcony they crouched upon creaked alarmingly. At last, the thunder of the catastrophe subsided, yielding to the roar of flames, the crack and rumble of settling masonry, the screams and sobs of countless shocked and wounded. Wordless, efficient, the cultists rendered their vid captors quiescent. They packed the recording equipment away. Swathed in the pilfered robes of minor mercantile clerks, they swept like ghosts down the Hab Tower stairs. They had what they wanted. Father would do the rest. Chapter 7. Gunfire echoed through the cathedrum. The rattle of autoguns and the sporadic shriek of a modified mining laser competed with the thudding booms of bolt weaponry. Lydran moved up from one pillar to the next, pressing towards the altar where the cultists had taken shelter. There were only a handful of heretics left, from the band that had ambushed the Gyrish arms transports as they rolled through Sector 18. Lydran wasn't blind to see the damage their running gun battle had wrought between the ambush site and the luckless cathedrum, nor the Gyrish lives lost in the crossfire. But the heretic's corruption must be purged, and so he had pressed the attack. The intercessors of Squad Audacious pushed up through the pews to either side of him, threading between the brushed metal prayer benches and snapping off bolt rounds at their beleaguered enemies. Marching behind them came Dreadnought Brother Geshmund, his footfalls cracking the flagstone floor, his war cries ringing to the cathedral's arched ceiling. The mining laser whooped again, an orange beam of energy spearing out from behind the altar to punch through Brother Thurian's chest. The intercessor stumbled several more steps, managing to fire off another bolt round that blasted shrapnel from the altar and threw the laser wielder from his feet. Then Thurian collapsed and did not rise. "Enough of this!" snarled Lydran, his patience running out. "Geshmund! Eradicate their position!"
"Guess you will it, Brother Librarian!" boomed the Dreadnought.
Geshmund halted his advance, bracing his massive feet with a crunch of stone. The barrels of his assault cannon began to spin, a shriek rising as they whirled faster, and then lit with strobing flame. A stream of massive caliber rounds tore into the altar and eroded it in seconds. Fire blitzed the glazed triptych that stood behind the altar and annihilated the images of Emperor, Sororitas, and High Lords that loomed there, the finely wrought electro candles that had bathed the altar in their warm light exploding. Blood flew up in sheets as the last few cultists met a grisly end, their defiant screams drowned by the cacophony of gunfire. Physaline smoke wafted like incense fumes as Geshmund's cannon ceased fire and its barrels rattled to a halt. Smoke and dust cleared to reveal nothing but butchered meat and smashed wreckage where the altar had stood. Lydran took a breath, sent out a runic hail for an apothecary, and blink-marked the cathedrum with a golden rune. Another cultist cell eliminated. The battle of attrition was grueling, the collateral damage regrettable, but they were bringing Captain Tor's vision to fruition one sector at a time. The enemy hadn't prevailed in a single stand-up engagement, and while it couldn't be denied that they were still finding their way through the cordon here and there, Lydran was satisfied that the entire Upper Hive would be a secure fortress of Imperial loyalty within days.
"Damnably slow progress, Captain," he whispered apologetically. "I do not doubt you would have done it quicker. But the siege takes as long as the siege takes, does it not?"
Lydran turned away from the annihilated altar and strode back towards the shattered doors of the cathedrum. A wide-eyed priest separated himself from the shadows of a devotional shrine and staggered into Lydran's path. His motions made him look drunk, though the librarian recognized the symptoms of shock easily enough. The priest stumbled, and Lydran caught him as gently as he was able, restoring him to his feet and brushing stone dust from the man's raiment.
"It is all right now, Freyter," he said, attempting to soften his voice. "We could not prevent the heretics from invading your sanctum, but we have purged them."
The damage," said the man, faltering,
his eyes roving the cratered interior of his cathedrum.
"What have you?"
The Emperor will forgive a few bolt holes more easily than he would the defilement of Xenos heretics, Freighter, said Lydran sternly.
The priest just blinked at him, and Lydran eased the elderly clergyman into a pew before proceeding on his way. He did not have the luxury of time to coddle the priest further. The man's faith would have to do the rest. Lydran passed Primaris Apothecary Justin, beneath the arch of the cathedrum's door, and the two warriors shared a nod. He stepped back out into the artificial light of the Commercias and surveyed the trail of bodies and battle damage that marked where they had driven their ambushes from their positions and hounded them to their final refuge. Ground cars smouldered where they had skidded and crashed, their plasterglass canopies cracked with bullet holes. A toppled statue of a local saint lay with its head crushed to powder where Geshmund had trodden upon it during his advance. Arbites and Medicaid transports were bullying their way through the crowded civilian onlookers, who stared with mute shock at the aftermath of the conflict. This was no place to fight a war, thought Lydran. Not for the first time. The sooner they could declare Uphive secure and drive down into the Laboratus, the better. In fact, he thought vehemently, the sooner they could declare Hive Angelicus itself secure and push outwards into full and proper battle, the happier he would be. The Hive shadow swirled with entirely too many shades of grey for his liking. Lydran turned towards the waiting form of his repulsor transport, the blocky tank hovering on a thrumming grav cushion nearby. His Auspex chimed, a priority hail from Chaplain Storn, and he answered it while slotting a fresh clip into his pistol and peripherally consulting his assault force's next designated coordinates. Lydran came to a halt, hearts thudding.
"Repeat that," he voxed.
Less than an hour later, Lydran stood, helm under one arm, in an elegant antechamber, located high up in the governor's palace. The room was richly appointed with art and statuary. It was high-ceilinged and cold, for all its ornamentation, a space intended to bring home Clan Callistus's power and cow those who sought personal audience with Gaia's planetary governor. A quartet of elite guards stood before the door to her audience chamber, their jean-bulked bodies clad in ornate carapace armour, styled after the utility suits of the minor clans. The aesthetic reminded Lydran uncomfortably of the cultists he had been fighting these last 11 days. 12, he corrected himself, checking the ornate digital cron that hung high on one wall of the chamber. It had just passed midnight. The Imperial Fist's 12th day on Gaia had begun. In his mind's eye, Lydran envisioned the thundering avalanche of stone and metal and living bodies as one hive level collapsed into another. He pictured Apothecary Lourdes and his brothers picking over the rack and ruin with their reductors ready, but almost certainly redundant. Lourdes had voxed through to Lydran just minutes earlier. By some miracle, they had dragged Hastor from the rubble, crushed and locked into a healing coma by his Susan membrane. But they had so far found no sign of those the champion had led.
If he lives, he will face such censure and dishonour that he may wish he had not, thought Lydran, with a grim shake of his head.
A chime sounded, clear as the ringing of pick against stone, and behind the guards, the gem-studded doors of Governor Callistus's audience chamber swung open. A faint scent of incense reached out to Lydran, accompanying the sound of soft and sombre choral singing. The guards moved aside without a word, and Lydran stepped through the doors. The audience chamber continued the theme of hammering home Clan Callistus's power and station on Gaia. In shape, it was a wide corridor, gem-encrusted columns holding its ceiling aloft. Hololithic installations depicted the greatest moments of Clan Callistus's reign, rich seams located, accords signed, monuments raised, tithes fulfilled, and inhuman enemies driven off. Trophies and tapestries decorated the walls. The head of an orc warlord hung next to the shattered blade of an Aldari corsair. Tithe certificates hung in suspensor fields, each stamped by the administratum and adorned with purity seals,
the tail fin of a lightning fighter craft, hovering in a column of golden light and richly decorated with Governor Callistus's personal heraldry. At the chamber's end, a gilded dais rose from the black-veined marble of the floor. Built into it was a throne, rendered in industrial ironwork, and wreathed with pipes and cabling, a halo of arc lumen shining from above it. This was a miner's throne, thought Lydran. An unsubtle reminder of where Gaia's wealth and power came from, and by extension, those of its governor. Osmindri Elicentris Callistus XXI sat her throne with straight-backed dignity. Her ochre skin was sheened almost gold in the light that spilled from the lumen, and the intensity of her gaze pierced Lydran even from the opposite end of the audience chamber. She still wore the uniform of a flight officer of the Gyrish Airborne, and her medals glinted on her chest. Lydran had not met many planetary governors since the Ultima founding, and he didn't doubt that some wore the trappings of martial accomplishment simply for effect. He didn't believe for a moment that Governor Callistus's medals were just for show.
"Approach, Brother Librarian," she commanded,
and Lydran did so. As he came closer, he registered other figures lurking behind the glare of the lumen halo. The governor's aged seneschal huddled so close to her throne that Lydran had initially taken the man to be a humped segment of machinery, worked into the seat of power. High Marshal Callistus, the governor's younger brother, stood ramrod straight upon the other side of the throne, his face an impassive mask, his appearance every bit as neatly managed as it had been the day Lydran had first seen him waiting at the bottom of the ramp of Mercurio Gate. Further back, lingering in the throne shadow as though he wished to remain unobserved, was Bishop Lottimer Renwick. More jean-bulked guards stood in alcoves that ran along the chamber's flanks. From the electrical thrum of the power blades they held at the ready, Lydran marked that their weapon spirits were roused and ready to strike. Not for the first time since his arrival on Gaia, Lydran wondered about the loyalties of the planet's rulers. How far did the cult's influence go? Who worshipped the Emperor upon this world, and who the vile father? Surely the governor herself could not be compromised, or else why would she have called for aid? But then, he reminded himself, that call had gone out only because of Sergeant Torgon's sacrifice. Besides, the foe had more than a year to spread their tendrils through this world, not to mention however long they had lurked beneath the surface before revealing themselves. But if the foe had inveigled themselves into the upper echelons of Gyrish society, how would Lydran know? He was no inquisitor, nor was he blessed with the gifts of a telepath or empath. He, his brothers, they were all weapons of open war, and here they found themselves besieging a fortress of smoke and shadows.
Besieging? He asked himself. Or besieged?
Lydran halted 10 paces before the governor's throne. He rapped the butt of his stave against the marble floor and bowed his head in a carefully calculated gesture of respect. Deep enough for equals, too shallow for a basement. He saw the High Marshal's posture stiffen, but the governor merely returned the gesture with a somewhat less pronounced nod.
My Lady Governor, a tragedy has occurred. I come before you to account for the actions of my battle brother, Elrich Hastur. He acted against my orders, and in doing so he has dishonoured us all. I bring you an apology, and my oath that such a thing will not happen again while my hearts beat.
Within, Lydran's anger was a raging, thrashing thing that he had to push down again and again. He had seen Hastur's resentment of him. It didn't take Lydran's keen insight to recognise that. But he had trusted the champion all the same, had faith in him as one of Dawn's chosen scions. He had chosen to believe that Elrich Hastur would comport himself with the discipline and loyalty demanded of an Imperial Fist. And in betraying that belief, Hastur had compromised not only himself, but his entire chapter, in the eyes of the Gyrish people.
"An apology?" the High Marshal spat, voice strained, eyes flashing. "Your assurance?
What good is that to the hundreds of thousands killed? Words are not nearly enough to account for this bloody disaster.
If you knew anything of the Adeptus Astartes, High Marshal, you would know that my apology is near unprecedented, and my oath is adamantine, said Lydaran, his voice dangerously low.
The High Marshal bristled, but he took a step back as though he had just remembered to whom he spoke.
Brother Librarian, I thank you for your presence and for your words, said Governor Callistus,
her expression unreadable.
Understand, however, that the tragedy your brothers set in motion by their disobedience is worse than any single act of destruction yet instigated by the cult of the writhing worm within this city.
It is the worst act of destruction instigated by the cult, my lady, asserted Lydaran. My tech marines have assessed the site and deemed the collapse to be the result of massive explosive trauma delivered to key supporting structures. My battle brothers may have walked into a trap, but they were not the authors of this devastation. If you wish to lay blame, your finger should point to the arbitrators that noted discrepancies around the Van Sappen warehouse, yet still allowed such a concentration of explosive material to be smuggled in and deployed. For that matter, turn your gaze to Great Clan Van Sappen, whose facility was so easily abused.
All involved shall be called to account, said the governor, her voice hard as bedrock. The failings of others do not excuse the failings of your own.
Lydran's eyes flashed, and his next words shattered that bedrock to rubble.
I am not here to beg your forgiveness, Governor, he barked. We fight a war for the survival of this world, and if that war had been kept without your city's walls prior to our arrival, then your streets would not have become our battleground. Look to your own failings before presuming to lecture the Adeptus Astartes on matters of war.
All about him quailed, even Governor Callistus.
Lydaran pressed on, feeding the vibrations upon the air, sensing thumping hearts and barely perceptible tremors of fear from the unaugmented humans in the room.
I come before you, in light of this latest atrocity, to ask again that the Conclave of Gaia set aside your politicking and your divisions. Throw your weight wholeheartedly behind my strategy. Accept that there will be damage and casualties and sorrow before victory can be won. Do not put me in a position where I must take their authority from them, or yours from you.
He saw the guards adjust their postures, blades lowering a little towards him. High Marshal Callistus had gone white as bone and looked upon the verge of apoplexy or panic. Carefully, Lydaran teased strands of empiric energy through his staff, readying himself in case someone did something truly foolish. Still, the governor maintained her dignified composure.
It's as though she were discussing trade tithes, he mused,
and could not prevent a slither of admiration colouring his thoughts.
You are not going to do that, though, are you, Brother Librarian?
She said, a statement phrased as a question.
No, my lady, I am not. Not at this juncture. Instead, I am going to remind you that you called for our aid, and that while division remains between us, our enemies flourish.
Lydaran sensed his misstep the moment he saw angry triumph flash across the High Marshal's features, though he didn't understand what opening he had left in his defences. He was not kept waiting long.
I fear that they may flourish all the better in the light of this,
barked Anthonius Callistus, producing an ornate vidcaster wand from his belt. Brandishing it, he thumbed the activation rune and projected grainy footage into the air before Lydaran. With a jolt, the librarian realized he was watching grainy footage of Hastor and Squad Thren approaching the Van Sappen warehouse. Static crackled, as though a vox signal had been intercepted. And then a voice, he knew did not belong to any space marine, spoke.
Bring it down! Crush the traitors in their lair! The Emperor demands absolute submission!
The footage jumped with static. Lydaran watched Hastor hack down the doors of the structure and duck inside. Moments later, there came a devastating explosion.
and the warehouse began to collapse. The footage shook, then cut out, replaced by a flickering worm form.
"Witness the true nature of your liberators,"
came a woman's deep voice, thick with anger and scorn.
"Witness the true nature of your emperor. Only father offers freedom from their oppression. Only the star children offer the hope of ascension. Join us."
With that, the recording cut out and then began to repeat.
"Enough!"
snapped Lydran, shocked and aghast at what he had seen.
"That was not the voice of Champion Hastor. This is a heretical fabrication."
The High Marshal hastily stowed his wand, but he could not keep a hint of vicious satisfaction from his face.
"A fabrication it may be, Brother Librarian, but that transmission has found its way throughout the Hive by now. Of that you can be sure,"
said the Governor.
"And this is not the only example of cult propaganda to reach our people. Your battle on the bridge on the day of your arrival, the bombardment of the Augustian Hall of Artifice, the deaths of all those trapped in the turbolift when your gunships fired upon Theseus Tower, the list goes on. Our subjects suffer, seemingly to them as badly as the cult you claim to be protecting them from."
"We make no such claim," said Lydran, his mind whirling.
"It does not matter, Brother Librarian," said the Governor. "You are perceived by our people as the angels of the Emperor, here to save them from the dangers of a dark and terrible galaxy. Instead, you appear to treat them with, at best, disdain. They do not truly understand why. Thrown, before you came before us this night, had you not been doing battle inside a sacred cathedral, one that was virtually reduced to ruins? Our people are beloved to us, Brother Lydran, and we believe that their faith is strong, but can you not see why they might begin to believe the lies of these heretics when faced with such terrifying and indiscriminate destruction?"
This time, Lydran's voice rose to a shout. Such fragility and foolishness beggared belief.
"What do you not understand, Governor? Your world stands upon the brink. If your people are being lied to, then it is your duty to stifle those lies."
"I am sure," began the High Marshal, but Lydran overrode him effortlessly.
"The entire Imperium faces a war for survival. There is no time for compassion or understanding. The Adeptus Astartes are weapons of last resort. We are the arbiters of the Emperor's will. We cannot waste time here when 100 other beleaguered worlds cry out for our aid. Do you understand what I am telling you?"
"I do,"
said Callistus, and Lydran could feel from the thump of her heartbeat, the tightness of her breathing and the way she gripped the arm of her throne, that she truly did. Still, he did not relent. Could not, for the sake of this world and its people. He had to make them all see.
"Our strategy thus far, our approach to this conflict, is as cautious and as diplomatic as we can afford to be. And then only because our orders are to preserve your world's infrastructure. If we fail here, we will declare this strongpoint of the Bastion Imperialis beyond redemption. Your next reinforcements will come to bombard the planet with viral munitions until nothing living remains. This will not be my doing, but it will happen. Governor, the Enderium ore will still be there when the viral payloads disperse."
Silence settled over the audience chamber like a shroud. Nobody moved. Governor Callistus held Lydran's gaze. At last, the High Marshal drew breath, his eyes bulging with outrage, spots of colour burning on his cheeks. Before he could speak, Bishop Renwick stepped forward and placed a hand upon his arm.
"The Brother Librarian is correct, Anthonius. He speaks the truth. Do not damn yourself with unwise words simply because you do not wish to hear what he has to say. There is greater sin in refusing to admit your failures than in facing them and seeking atonement. If we had handled matters ourselves, the Emperor's angels would not be here at all."
"Brother Lydran, our people are loyal," said the Governor. They are as faithful to the Emperor's cause as we and our conclave. We all will pay whatever cost must be paid to avoid such final sanction.
Loyal? Faithful? I wonder, said Lydran, his tone still hard.
Do you truly know how far the rot of heresy has spread, Governor Callistus? I heard more than one strident voice of dissent amongst your conclave, more than one utterance that skated perilously close to heresy. Can you be sure that none of the clan lords, none of your advisers, are compromised?
Oh, this is outrageous!
Barked the High Marshal, shaking off Renwick's hand.
You make accusations against those you have no right to impugn. Gaia is vital to the Imperium, vital! We will not be questioned in this manner.
I can assure you that it is not, and that you will, said Lydran grimly. As I understand it, High Marshal, entire platoons of Gairish airborne have vanished throughout this conflict, along with all their material, while others have been reported locked in vicious internecine warfare, or openly declaring themselves for father. If you find this method of questioning insufficient, my apothecaries know other ways to ask.
Brother Lydran, enough!
Snapped the governor, as the High Marshal's mouth worked soundlessly.
You address our brother, and you overstep.
With respect, my lady, I do not, boomed Lydran. I cannot! I am of the Adeptus Astartes, the Imperial Fists, no less. I speak with the Emperor's voice and act with his implicit sanction, and I will not hesitate to do either.
He speaks the truth, said Renwick, quiet and sober. If the angels of the Emperor cannot deliver us, none will.
Thank you for your counsel, Bishop,
said the governor. And Lydran detected no trace of irony or anger in her voice.
Brother Lydran, we begin to truly understand your position and your purpose here. We wish that this had been made clearer when first you arrived.